You can now hear Film Actually on Stitcher Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or WebOS device. The latest episode is always available for you. No syncing needed, no memory wasted. Don't have Stitcher? Download it for free today at Stitcher.com.
What's this day of rest shit? What's this bullshit? I don't fucking care. It don't matter to Jesus.
But you're not fooling me, man. You might fool the fox in the league office, but you don't fool Jesus. It's Bush League psycho stuff. Laughable, man. I would have fucked you in the ass Saturday. I'll fuck you in the ass next Wednesday instead. Woo! You got a day Wednesday, baby.
He's cracking.
It'll be much less terrifying if you just come to me.
This man's got nerves.
Make love in the hammock.
Good.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Film Actually, episode 73 for the 29th of January, 2012. I am David McVeigh, and I am joined by Josh Philpott. How are you, Josh?
I'm good. I think we earned our explicit tag in like the first 10 seconds of that show.
I know. It's pretty cool, isn't it?
I love that quote, but Jesus Christ.
For those who don't know what that comes from The Big Lebowski. And my favorite my favorite line in that entire speech, I've actually capped out as a separate capture to have on the soundboard, which is this one.
It's Bush League psycho stuff.
I just love that clip. Anyway, so yes, John Turturro, as he isn't often. Let me just tell you, he's usually a little bit more serious than that, but he was having some fun with it, and it's a great clip. This is Film Actually, the official movie podcast of geekactually.com, and we're down a man. Man down.
All I can say, it's weird.
I know
it's weird not having Richard here.
It is. I don't like
the soundboard hasn't even started yet.
All I can think is I look over to where he's supposed to be, and
it's really dark in here.
Yeah, it's really dark.
Good to see you left that one on.
Of course. That's going to stay there as a permanent addition, I think. Yeah. Anyway, what are we doing this week, Josh? We've got a new film review of the fourth Underworld film, Underworld Awakening, coming your way very soon. And of course, we should also remind people who haven't been listening for the last couple of episodes that we have spun the news section off into its own show, which you can find on the feed called called Film Actually News. So keep your eyes on the feed for that. It's a fun, fast show, and it doesn't take very long to get through.
It really doesn't.
No, it doesn't. We also have a brand new list of five, which is five films that have made it to number four and are worth watching, which is implying, I believe we're on the same page for this, Josh, which is that it's a series that has reached at least four films, and a series overall is actually worth watching, even if not all the films may be stellar.
Yeah, no, I'm going to have to put that caveat for a couple of my films.
There's a couple I was actually going to put on this list, which I didn't in the end because I thought it's going to be too hard to explain. But I've got a couple of series where I love them, but the majority of films are crap. So we'll come back to that at list time. But we like to start this show off, as we always do, with a what we've been watching section. And so, Josh, what have you been watching this week?
Well, look, I've been a bit all over the place. Obviously, I saw the film that we are going to be reviewing this week. I've also been slogging through a whole bunch of I'm slowly transferring my DVD collection to digital files. Mm-hmm. So I'm rewatching a lot of old films. I rewatched most of Urban Legend. Say it has not dated well.
You know, I've only ever seen the first one.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's like that was the one I was watching because I was like, the first one was good. No, it really wasn't.
No, it wasn't good. That's why I never moved on. So,
yeah. Oh, it was still funny though. Like you look at the cast and it was just that perfect like trifecta of everything that was the 90s. Mm. Like all that early, that late 90s period. It had Jared Leto and, you know, every other star.
And that
was
chick
like,
with the curly hair and the really wild eyes. What's her name? She appeared in a couple of films.
I don't know, but she always plays crazy.
Yeah, she does. She always plays crazy, exactly.
Well, I guess if you've got a strength. Mm-hmm. So I saw that. I saw, what was the other one that I was watching? I saw Pulse 3.
You're really just making your way through those, aren't you?
No, there's only three. I'm done now.
Oh, you're done. God. Okay.
Yes, that will be this week's terrible review.
Oh, really? Should we play that theme?
No, because I haven't watched that one yet. I haven't compiled what I thought about it. That's what I mean.
Okay. Do you have one for us this week?
This week I was going to do Marathon Man because I didn't really get a chance to really talk about that one last week.
Let's do this. Ready?
Yes.
Welcome to Josh's Bargain Basement.
Good evening.
So, Josh, what is the Bargain Basement film of the week?
All right, so Marathon Man. Now, me and you have had a little bit of a talk about this, but I think we need to go into a bit more depth this time. So I sat down and watched this film, and, of course, one of the big points about this film was, of course, that you had Dustin Hoffman, who was big at the time, and, of course, on the other side you had Laurence Olivier.
Who was huge at the time.
Who was huge at the time. Now, this was an interesting little film to go and visit because I don't have the context of the generation. I didn't see it at its time. So watching it now, it's not quite the film that – like, I mean, I went in with no expectations, but I think this film – am I right in saying that this film did all right?
Oh, yeah. This film was actually a bit of a to use a phrase, it's kind of wanky to use, but it was a bit of a cultural phenomenon. And that phrase from the film where he goes, is it safe?
Yeah.
Basically was everywhere. That was like the may the force be with you of its time. You know what I mean? It was like everybody. It was huge. This was actually, I saw this film later. In 76, I was actually, nine. So I was a little bit young to see this at the cinema, but I saw it in the early 80s. And yeah. I loved The Marathon Man. I think this is a film, and I think once again, I mean, it is a time and space. When I saw it, it was still only 4 years old. You know what I mean? So it's still relatively fresh in everybody's mind. I'm a huge fan of William Goldman, the guy that wrote it. He also wrote the novel that it's based on. He went on to write stuff like The Great Waldo Pepper, and he wrote The Bridge Too Far, and he wrote All the President's Men.
I see.
He's an amazing writer. And the guy who directed it, John Schlesinger, if I'm not wrong, I'm just bringing up his credits now before I make a fool of myself. He directed Midnight Cowboy, which is also a zeitgeist of its time. You know, I'm walking here.
Yeah.
it was a really big film in its day.
Yeah, it's weird because it's like I watch it now and I just don't like – I think it's that fact that it is so old. Like, I looked at it and I was like, this has to be early 80s. And no, it's older than that.
76.
And it's like, yeah, and you look at it and it's like, you expect any film from that era to just be cut a bit cleaner. And that was the one thing I really noticed about the film. It's like, it's not really that well produced. Like, the sound on it at least on the DVD that I got, was awful. And the general kind of consensus to the film that I got was it kind of goes all over the place. Like, it's interesting because I never quite understood, and perhaps, Dave, maybe you can clear this up for me, because I didn't think it was a terrible film. And again, the problem with a film like that, especially as you put it, that zeitgeist nature to it, is that it wasn't that there's anything wrong with the film. It's just that it's been done so many times.
Since.
Like, the style, the things that happen in this film have already been done now thousands of times before.
That dental scene with the questioning and the is it safe, that scene shocked people. That was it was truly, nobody had seen anything like that, and it was quite gut-wrenching actually to see this guy basically having his hands in this person's mouth and, you know, threatening to rip out teeth and stuff, you know what I mean? And at the time it was actually a very risky film. I think it actually garnered an R rating at the time.
It doesn't surprise me.
And it was rough around the edges. This is also a couple of great behind the scenes stories to this film. This is, you may have heard this before. This is the film it comes from, though, where Dustin Hoffman, who is the, was, I don't know if you know, it still is, but he was the consummate method actor. at the time. Everything was about you have to have experienced it before you can do it, right? Mm. And yeah. he was basically in the rehearsal process, was, you know, getting up there and really goading on Sir Laurence Olivier and all this sort of stuff, basically saying, you know, we've really got to get into the mood and the time and the, you know, this and that, and, you know, hit me, you know, and all this sort of stuff, right? And so Sir Laurence Olivier at the time was actually very sick. And the story has it, as William Goldman actually tells the story in his book Adventures on the Screen Trade, he said that there was actually one point where Dustin Hoffman said, let's just get up and walk it, and we'll walk the scene, and we can talk about it while we're walking. So Laurence Olivier got up and walked it, and he was really sick and really frail, and he basically walked around this rehearsal room for hours, just basically humoring Dustin Hoffman, as Hoffman basically jumped around him like a little jackrabbit, to the point where Sir Laurence Olivier actually turned to him at one point and finally said, why don't you try acting, my boy?
Oh, wow.
And that's a very famous quote from Sir Laurence Olivier, and it comes from this film, because Hoffman was insane. Frankly, he drove everybody crazy on the sets of many of his films in that time period.
Oh yeah, and it's that sort of thing that, like, you can really see the energy in him. Like, he had passion for his art form, and he liked to try to get into the character. He has, I think, one of the most interesting moments for me of the film is the film where he starts running after the other runner.
Mm.
That scene really is kind of disturbing in a lot of ways. Like, he has this requirement to kind of stay focused and push himself.
Yeah.
And you can really see that kind of acting would have really got him that kind of energy in the film that people probably talked about. But, like, I mean, Sir Laurence Olivier was definitely the person of this film. And you can really tell that he was sick, but he really kind of used it.
Oh, there's a sense of menace behind him all the way through the film. And that
But it's interesting because it almost at the same time is that sickness as well. Mm. Like, he has that kind of frailness, but he also has a real... Yeah, you're right. He's got both. He's got menace and frail at the same time. It's that weird kind of...
And you could almost say that him being frail and being sick makes him more dangerous. It's almost like that wounded animal syndrome.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
I actually really like this film. I can understand why if you watched it cold today, you might go, yeah, okay, it's a little bit dated and so forth in its time. But if you take it in context with when it was made, it is one of the classics of the 70s. The only problem that I had with the film in general is a problem I have with Laurence Olivier in general, which is he's not very good at dialects, and he does this generic European accent whenever he has to play a generic European, and he does the same accent when he's playing the Jewish father and the jazz singer. He does the same accent when he was in The Boys from Brazil. He does the same accent in this. It's like he's not very good at dialects, and so he's got his one generic European that he uses whenever he has to pull it out of the bag, but he's such a good actor that we kind of forgive him for that.
Look, I mean, I definitely think, like, for me, it's no more than a 7. I think that it's difficult when you're so used to pulling things out of the bargain bin that are so average. Like, I mean, Cujo's kind of an exception, what we talked about last week, because of the fact that Cujo is a horror, and horror, you expect a lot less out of kind of acting and stuff like this, and you're more looking at the whether they establish what you're supposed to in a horror. Things like terror, you know, do you feel afraid for the people that are in the film? Like, it's a very different kind of system, like, rating wise. And when I pulled this out, it was like, I think I almost felt a little bit insecure with my purchase, because I was kind of like, I don't think this is quite what I wanted it to be, because it's like you expect to pull out the bad films.
Yeah, well, that's true, yeah.
And it's definitely a different kind of film. Like, it actually required thought to process that one, which is why we didn't do it last week, because I was still kind of like, I'm not sure what I think about that film.
Mm.
But I've had time to process, and I would rather do that over Pulse 3, because Pulse 3 is going to take a while to process.
That's fine. No, I do. I think it's an interesting one, and if you are of my age bracket and you haven't seen Marathon Man for a long time, it might be worth going back and having a look at. If you're of my sister's age bracket, I don't know if she'll get much out of it. So
I definitely, by the time I got to the film, kind of wanted it to end, but it was more about the performances. But it was sort of like there were blocks of performances for me. The overall film kind of, I thought the resolution just fell a bit. Like, I think it just faded It was like, you know, like I see what they were doing with it. And I see what they were trying to get across with it. But to me, it just didn't work. Yeah, it's a decent little film. But I definitely think it would be a rental.
Okay.
If anything.
Now, my question is, it's the bargain basement. How much did you pay for this film?
$4.
Oh, I want this movie.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to go buy this movie because I'd like to have a copy of this in my collection.
Yeah, so, look, I will warn you, the transfer's not very good.
Yeah, I was a bit worried about that, too. What I would really like is for them to re-release it on Blu-ray. I mean, this is a 35mm print. This film could look beautiful, you know what I mean? It's not some low-budget fare. It was a decent film in its day. So it would be nice to see them, you know, pull out a decent print of a film that is, you know, it is a classic of its era. Bring it back, you know what I mean?
Yep, damn right. Need the cult status.
Absolutely. All right, so what else are you watching? Anything else?
I know there's one. It's on the tip of my tongue, but
while you think about that.
Oh, no, that's okay. Right. Just in a small TV side note, I've started watching American Horror Story.
Oh, no, I've got this lined up to watch, and I haven't watched it yet. What did you think of it?
First episode, look, you know my opinion on things that are Lynchian.
Right.
And I'm not too much of a fan of these things.
Yeah.
And it definitely floats a fine line between getting a little bit too much into that. But everyone I've spoken to has said to me that the first episode sets up way too much.
Right.
And it's almost like they were trying to find the feet with it to sort of find where they wanted to go. Because it has some stellar moments, but it's really tough to watch. It is disturbing. And it's disturbing not in that like visually confronting way, though it is at times.
Mm-hmm.
It's more about the psychological aspects of it. It's definitely got me intrigued, and I'm very much looking forward to watching it.
Fascinated to watch it because a lot of people are saying it's actually genuinely quite scary.
And, oh, dude!
And for television, I'm curious to see that. You know what
well,
I mean?
Because it's terrifying in that way that it's not necessarily like, yes, it has all that typical this day and era kind of things where it's got lots of sex in it and, you know, sexualization and it does have a bit of horror. But essentially, it's more about the terrifying nature of the weird characters.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. No, I'm definitely going to sit down and watch that because, as I say, I've got them lined up waiting for me. I just haven't got to them yet. So I've been trying to catch up with a lot of the television from this season. So there was too much this year and not enough time. That was the problem. All right. The one that I wanted to mention, a couple things I've watched, but I'll just bring it down to one. I've been after a copy of this film for a while. I actually saw it in 88 when it came out.
Mm-hmm.
And I really liked it. And I remember when it came out on VHS, and I actually owned a copy of it on VHS, and I really liked it there too. And I haven't seen it since. And it vanished. It's not available on DVD in this country. It's not available on Blu-ray in this country. It's just vanished. And I really, really want them to bring it back. You can get it on DVD in the States. But once again, it's like a low-rent DVD release. The film is called... Now, it's got two titles because it was actually renamed for Australia, but the original name of the film in America is a film called Shoot to Kill. And in Australia, when it came out in 88, it was actually renamed Deadly Pursuit.
Right.
This film stars Tom Baron.
I prefer the original name, just to get started.
It's interesting. When you actually watch the film, I prefer the Australian title. So it's interesting. And I was just looking at IMDb here, and they actually listed as Deadly Pursuit, and underneath it says Shoot to Kill in brackets original title. So it looks like they may have actually started to change the name everywhere. Because the film is actually, it stars Tom Berenger, who you would know from wonderful films like Platoon, and the esteemed Sidney Poitier from In the Heat of the Night. And basically, it is about an FBI agent who is tracking down a person who did a hostage situation and got away. He outsmarted them and got away. And they've managed to find out that he's making his way to the bad guy is making his way to the Canadian border via country. And so Sidney Poitier, as the city-bound FBI agent, goes out to the country, teams up with mountain man Tom Berenger, and basically chases the guy across the wilderness, trying to get him before he gets to the Canadian border. It's a really good chase film. It's a really good action film from the 80s that it doesn't get enough acclaim as far as I'm concerned. And I managed to get my hands on a copy and just really thoroughly enjoyed watching it again. This film is so clever. Well, first of all, it also co-stars, I should say, and sorry if I sound really superficial, but it stars Kirstie Alley when she was still hot as the guide for the basically what's happened is the killer slash hostage person has killed one of the people on a nature trek and has taken his place. And Kirstie Alley is their guide.
Mm.
And where the film gets very clever is we've never seen the face or know who the person is who is the killer. Because he's always been hidden or behind the person or something like that. When we actually get to meet all of these men who are being taken up the mountain by Kirstie Alley, they're all played by actors who have played bad guys in other movies.
Oh, that's so we cool.
So we don't know who it is, because the people who are actually going up the mountain are people like Richard Mazur and Andrew Robinson and Clancy Brown and all these actors. And you sit there and go, I've seen all of you before and you've all played bad guys, so I have no idea which one you are.
That's good. I like that. How's the film? So it's good?
It's good. It really holds up. I really liked it. Some of the music in it is a little bit dated and so forth. It is a little bit 80s in places, but it is actually a really good film. And once again, you know, it's that thing that J.J. Abrams said about cell phones being the death of drama. If they had been able to have a cell phone in this film would have been over in 10 minutes.
Yeah.
But the fact is they didn't, and the FBI agent has to put on the backpack and actually go across country trying to track him down. It's just great. You know, it's just, you sit there and go, this is really clever, and it's really action-packed, and it's a really good thriller. So if you ever get a chance to see, if you're in America, look for a film called Shoot to Kill. If you're in Australia, look for a film called Deadly Pursuit from 1988. Well worth having a look at. So
nice.
I'm
going to have to find it now.
Yeah, well, I'll loan you my copy. It's all right. You can have a look at it. Well worth having a look at, and I really enjoyed it. So, and I think I'm going to talk to Richard, because Richard's been doing his column 80s bits.
Yeah.
I think he might want to cover this.
Nice.
All right. Did you think of that other film, or should we move on?
No, that was it.
All right, cool. All right, let's move on then. So we are reviewing this week Underworld Awakening, which is the fourth film in the Underworld series. And now I'm going to get this wrong, and I want to apologize to the directors in advance, because I have no idea how to pronounce their names, because they've got all sorts of weird, you know, how you've got umlauts and stuff. They've got those weird ones from Scandinavia, which are like little circles above their names, their letters and stuff. And I have no idea how to pronounce this, but if I pronounced it like it was written, it would be Måns Marland and Bjørn Stein. But I'm sure that's pronounced completely wrong. Okay, so we'll just leave it at that.
We tried our best.
We tried our best, and I apologize way in advance. All right. Now, this film has got a million writers, and I don't quite know why, but Len Wiseman, who was actually the writer-director of the first film, John, what's his name? Hilvan, I think it is, or Hilvan, or something like that. Alison Burnett, and the one that really caught my eye, J. Michael Straczynski, who's a comic book writer.
Yes, that's correct.
And also created the TV series Babylon 5. So I thought, that's interesting. His name really stood out in the credits. And it's based on characters by Len Wiseman and Danny McBride. Not the same Danny McBride, this is an English Danny McBride. And Kevin Griveaux, I think his name is. What are you doing over there? It sounds like a thunderstorm.
I'm sorry, Dave. It's become unbearably hot in here, so I just changed headphones quickly. I'm sorry. I was trying to do it professionally, but it didn't work.
That's all right. It doesn't matter. That's the beauty of doing a podcast. We can get away with anything. All right.
It's an interesting logic you have there, Dave.
Yeah, that's kind of, well, you know, try opening a TV show with the opening clip that I did today. All right. So the cast is Kate Beckinsale, who is back. Stephen Rea, or Ray, I think you pronounce his name. Michael Ealy. Who else is in this of note? Charles Dance is in it, who is of note. Now, I was actually looking. Theo James played David. I am pretty sure David was a different actor in the first
film. It was. He was actually, by memory, I think he's a Kiwi or something like that. I'm spitballing here, but it's like Scott. No, it's not Scott Speedman. No,
it was something Speedman from memory.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's Scott Speedman. Anyway, I'll look that up. But, all right, continue.
All right, so, I mean, that's basically, where are we? I've actually already got it here if you want me to do it. Where are we? Director. Here we are.
Scott Speedman.
Scott Speedman, right. Is he Kiwi?
I don't know. I'm looking that up now. Would you stop asking questions I don't know the answers to yet? No, he's actually born in London.
Oh,
so
well,
I was completely
right. All right, so he's English. All right. So, I'm going to read a synopsis here, and the IMDb synopsis always make me... Oh, and India Isley was also in this. Now, the synopses of on IMDb always make me laugh, so let's have a look what they say. They say, when human forces discover the existence of the vampire and lichen clients... Or should I do it like this? When human forces discover the existence of the vampire and lichen clients... No, I won't do that. A war to eradicate both species commences. The vampire warrioress, Celine, leads the battle against humankind. No, I don't think that's the story at all, but that's beside the point.
It's kind of the very basic version.
The first half is correct. The second half kind of strays off into its own territory. We'll talk about that in the review. Anyway, so here is the trailer for Underworld Awakening.
Today is a day that will change the course of the war. The epidemic that has plagued this city may soon be coming to an end. Scientists may have finally found the one that will lead us to the cure.
Everything they've told you is a lie.
Subject 2 escaped. It's somewhere in the building.
It'll kill us all.
Put it down. Now!
For 12 years, I was held captive by the humans. The world I once knew has changed. Vampires and lichens are now the hunted.
If we are to survive as a species,
we must resist the humans.
This is a new war.
Something else escaped.
It's a girl.
She's the only hybrid child who has ever existed.
The humans and lichens will hunt her down at any expense.
They're here.
Created something more than twice the size of any lichen I've ever seen.
Whatever it is they want from her, it's worth dying for.
She is the key to winning this war.
We stand and we fight.
Your kind will never be as powerful as us. No matter how hard you fight, you won't win.
You don't know me very well. Day was bound to come.
All right, so that was Underworld Awakening, and can I just tell you that I've got a real thing for Kate Beckinsale at the moment. I always kind of have, but she really was badass in this.
Yes, yeah. She was.
It's like the last film was a prequel, so we didn't have any Celine, and I thought Underworld 2 was kind of weak.
Two was terrible. Like 2's not terrible, but it's just average.
I found it really slow. That was the problem. It wasn't very action packed at all. And whereas the first one I really liked, and I quite liked 3. A lot of people derided 3. I quite liked 3.
No. Me and you are in the same boat for that, man. I actually think it's a really good film. And I think the only problem for people is that they went in going, I want more Underworld. And they were like, this isn't the Underworld I know, therefore I don't like this.
That's
it's
right.
Like, as a film, it's really good. And also contextually, as a friend brought up recently to me, which I think is awesome, it's like the cool thing about all these films is all the same actors are in all of these films.
Yeah.
And that's what I love about them. It's like if you get to 4 and you've actually been paying attention and seen all these films properly, again, as the horror fan in me, you really get the sense, like, you really start to love these characters. Like, not necessarily, you know that she's been through a whole shitload of bad things.
Yeah, yeah.
You also know that she's very powerful. You also know that she's very, like, she has a particular character. And to see her in this fourth one, you see her acting change based on the fact that she is in a very different situation.
Well, she's also pissed off. Yeah, I love that. I love the fact that she's
to deal
angry.
With the fact that she's now, you know, mother as well. Yeah, that's not really a spoiler.
That's kind of a spoiler, but that's all right. It doesn't matter. I mean, basically the story for this one, the IMDb didn't do it justice. Excuse me. The story basically is it's now 12 years later. Celine wakes up to find herself in captivity, basically frozen. And during her sleep, basically, the humans discovered the lichens and the vampires and purged them like they were a disease. And she's kind of annoyed by all of this.
Well, it's the interesting character shift because it's sort of like, if you've watched the whole series, it's sort of like in the first one, she almost signs with the humans. It's like she is more the world's protector than she is like any particular type of protector. Like she's not actually a vampire protector. In the first one, she basically turns on vampires because they have fucked up the balance of power. And essentially, she then writes that, and things don't quite go to plan.
Exactly.
And then sort of the second one, look, the second one's just a basic action movie. I don't actually give it much credit for furthering the series, really.
It actually got a little bit too political is what it got.
Well, no. Look, it gets a little bit political, but the one thing that you can take from it as a – look, because I'm now a fan of the Underworld series. I like being able to say that, and we'll get back to that. I'll break into that later. But the thing that 2 really did set up for me, and the one important reason to watch it, is for the build relationship between her and Scott Speedman's character.
Yes.
Like essentially that to me is that's where the power of the film is. But yeah, so you get that, and then 3 sets up the lore. Like it sets up all this back.
Well, yeah, because we have those flashbacks in part 1. And what we're getting in 3 is we're getting the filling in all the details on that and how that all came to be. And I love that. I really like the fact that we went back and started all over again. You know what I mean? And basically said, this is how it happened. And I thought, I thought after 2, quite frankly, I thought that's as far as the series could go. It's the only direction it could go, because I thought part 2 kind of killed the series. But along comes this film. And this film, first thing I said when the credits rolled, I said, boy, they just started a whole new franchise, didn't they?
Mm.
You know, it's like you could actually feel it in the last scene where you just go, we're ready to go. We can do another 2, you know, another 3 of these.
Well, it ends with passion.
Mm.
It ends with power. And this is the interesting thing about it.
All right. So Kate Beckinsale, let's just say right off the bat that as far as ass kicking chicks go, she just tears Mila Jovovich a new one.
Oh, dude, especially lately.
Oh, man. I tell you, as soon as she put on that long coat and her hair is flicking and she's walking in the rain, I just went, oh, man, Celine, you're my hero. You know what I mean? It's the hero walk, you know what I mean? And there's just nothing she can't do. She's just awesome.
And to break off just for a second into her acting, I have to give her credit. She's 4 films deep, and no matter what people say, there is a fan base for this, and she is truly paying homage. Like, she is acting every second of this film.
And this is also a big thing about Kate Beckinsale that I think we should mention, is the fact that she is actually a damn good actress. And so she did my impression of all of this is that she did Underworld basically as a favor to her husband, who is Len Wiseman. And she kind of went, yeah, okay, I'll put on the black vinyl for you and everything else and go do this. But she's embraced it since then. You know what I mean? And I mean, this is a girl. I mean, she had a career. I don't think she needed Underworld. You know what I mean?
No, she didn't.
But she did Underworld, and it's turned her into a cult hero. And I think, she never feels like she's phoning it in. She feels like she's putting everything into this.
Yeah, and I think, look, it was a good idea to kind of distance the 2 of them and, you know, sort of give this to a different director, which is, in my opinion, a really good thing.
Like, well, Len Wiseman hasn't directed one since the first one. He produces them.
He
produces them, and in this particular case, he also wrote this one with a couple of other writers. But he's off doing Total Recall and stuff right now, so he doesn't have time. When the third one was being made, he was doing Die Hard. He did the latest Die Hard. So he's moved on from Underworld now. You know what I mean? So, but she hasn't. And that's what I like about it. I like the fact that after number 2, and when she didn't appear in number 3, obviously she couldn't because it was a prequel. I actually thought that's it. She doesn't want, the reason they did a prequel obviously must be that she doesn't want to do anymore. But that's obviously not the case because she's back.
Yeah, and look, I don't think it's just a money thing. I mean, like, I think if you sat down and actually looked at the story, especially once you get people like Michael Straczynski,
it's a hell of a name.
Yeah, it's it shows so much more passion and power, and it really does feel like a comic book film now in the best kinds of ways, like in the truly best kind of ways. Like it's balls to the wall action the whole way through the film, and it doesn't waste time on dialogue. Like it just it occasionally shaves the ground of possibly throwing out some crap lines or something like that. But you just go in, and it's like if you just go in wanting a film and not really getting too deep into what you expect from it, it gives you a fucking good ride.
Absolutely. And I will say also that the relationship between her and this daughter that she didn't know she had could have been a dangerous move. These sort of moves in films often end in all sorts of bad places, but they actually managed to make this work. And once again, credit to Kate Beckinsale. You know what I mean? Or Beckinsale, I think it is. And you sit there and go, credit to her. She made the emotions work.
Oh, dude, absolutely. And it's interesting because in this film, for people that are sitting on the fence as to whether or not to go see it, it's really interesting to see Celine for kind of, not for the first time, but really to come up against something that is just way too powerful. And to see her reactions and how she deals with that and how, you know, like she eventually, you know, does her thing as she does. Like it's really good acting. But also it's so well choreographed and so well shot.
Do you know what it is, Josh? I reckon Underworld always felt like a little bit like a low-rent Matrix. And I think Underworld The Awakening or Underworld Awakening now feels like it's kind of an equal to that sort of level of film. You know what I mean?
I definitely think this film felt like a massive injection for the series. Yeah. Like this isn't just, oh, well, I'll go see the next one because that wasn't that bad. This was a, fuck, man, this is a series again. Let's do this. And look, I was, by the time the film ended, I'm so glad they end it how they do and not, you know, cross an unfortunate barrier that would have made it corny as hell. But it's interesting because it's like you've not only got reason to do another one, you've also got people that left the cinema wanting to see that next one.
Yeah, look, when we finished the preview screening of this, I don't think I saw a face in that audience where they were going, oh my God, what did we just watch? Everybody was smiling like, wow, that was a surprise. You know what I mean? I think everybody went in kind of going, okay, here goes another one. You know what I mean? And yet everybody was surprised at what they just watched. And I really like that. I really like when you get a surprise. And everybody went, wow, that wasn't what we were expecting. We were expecting a number four junk, and we actually got a rebirth. Quite frankly, I think the title is really appropriate.
Yeah, no, it really is. Interesting thing, there seems to be more than one film that decided to use. When I was browsing through my list for four films, I found another film, man, that has the fourth film as Awakening.
Oh, really?
The Omen.
Oh,
The Omen is also called Omen 4 The Awakening. A terrible film.
Awful.
But I just thought that was interesting. I was like, there you go.
All right. I want to move into spoilers. I want to talk about some of the other stuff. And first, before we go into spoilers, I just want to put out that trailer we just played. I love the fact. I don't know if they did it on purpose. I think they did. But I love the fact that it actually says the text coming up on screen in between the action beats. And it goes, Kate Beckinsale on one. And the next one that comes up says, in 3D. And I think the slides might have been just a little bit too close together, but that is a really good selling point. All right, so I'm gonna say damn straight, hands down, if you like a good action film, go now. Yep. Don't wait, go out and see this. I think you will be pleasantly surprised. Now, if you don't like the Underworld films as a whole, you don't like that whole blue steel tint that they put on everything, and you don't like the, you know, moody introspective vampires and blah, maybe not for you. But overall, really highly recommended. What do you think, Josh?
Look, man, I think that this has officially become a series that will not only be in my collection, but is also something I'm very proud to own. I think that people don't give this series enough credit. Yeah, you may not have liked the first one, but if you look at, and I know that this wasn't your favorite part of the second one, Dave, but if you look at the politics that have been set up, the places that they've taken it, the interesting characters that they've brought in and given so much depth, like this isn't a standard horror in the fact that it's like, this character is moody action, go, you know, and like that's it. Like her character is probably the least developed. But like you have all these people like Bill Nighy's character in this weird web of intrigue that you have between all these people and all the past histories and, you know, sort of the people screwing over each other and all this sort of stuff. And then to take this fourth one and to basically have to turn the vampires into the ones that you're rooting for because the humans have become the butchers. Takes it to a different place. And it's like, to keep a series inventive and to keep a series interesting like they have, I think this film is fantastic. And it's like, I think all of the films are good. I think the two is definitely the worst out of the series. But no, I rip this film very hard. And I think if you haven't done the Underworld series, slog through and do it. And if you did do number one but never did any of the other ones, maybe go back, because I'm told three people to do that recently. And all three came back to me and said, I actually really enjoyed going back to that series, because it's like, it's almost like we all had too high expectations the first time around. And when you watch it for what it is the second time around, you really enjoy it.
Yeah, no, I agree. I agree. I've actually just recently gone through them again, and I actually still think two is the weakest, but I really enjoyed watching one and three again. So, and this is definitely a Blu-ray purchase when this one comes out.
Definitely.
This is just is hotness. All right, we need to do a spoiler zone. Now, I don't have Richard here to play his Claxton, so I'm going to have to find a sound. What do we do for spoilers? Let's try this.
I'm the dude.
Okay, so we're in spoilers as of this point onwards. Actually, I should just reiterate that we will put the spoiler... Thank you, Jeff Bridges. We will put the spoiler time codes in the show notes. All right, so now let's talk about this film here for a second. And I'm just going to say that I think the one of my favorite things in this entire film has got to be when she first defrosts.
Yeah.
And she stands up and all of her clothes and boots and everything are all nicely laid out in the glass cabinet.
That was fantastic. I just like the fact that she's just immediately like kicking ass. It's like, it's not even, she doesn't even need enough time to defrost. She's just like, that's it, I'm gonna fuck some people up. And she just tears through an entire building. Most interesting cameo, Wes Bentley, who is really, really shit. I watched P2 recently. Oh my God, maybe I'll make that next week's film. That was truly tragic.
What's but, P2? I don't think I've seen this.
Well, that's exactly it. P2. Parking Terror Horror or something. I don't know. I don't even remember.
I've never seen this.
Yeah, dude, it's literally a film about Wes Bentley basically terrifying a girl in a parking garage.
Oh,
there's a bit more depth to it than that, but funnily enough, it doesn't really feel like it. But this guy is, I don't know what happened along the way, but he just, maybe it's his eyebrows or those intense eyes, but he just doesn't seem to be able to play any role apart from creepy. And to have him in the movie for like 3 seconds and then get him completely, well, fucked up and then thrown out a window, I was like, well, I don't know what you were doing in the film, but hooray. I don't know why. I get a real kick out of watching him die. But yeah, interesting with that. I think that the addition of the ginormous lichen was something.
The four times size lichen. He's fantastic.
Yeah. I'm also really liking he's probably the flattest character in the film, but Michael Ealy, who's the black guy that helps her out throughout the film. I don't know, is it just me, or is there something, does he just scream vampire to you? Do you think they're going to turn him?
I think they'll I definitely think they'll turn him. He's got the right eyes for it as well.
Exactly. I'm just looking at a picture of him now and I'm just like, dude, you are just vampire bait. It's just going to happen. But yeah, no, look, I definitely thought the violence, my God, the violence in this film was fantastic.
It was fantastic. And they didn't try and curb it at all. I love that.
Dude, but and then from the word go, they're making you very aware that they're like, we will not be backing down and there will be no PG-13 in this film. You are about to see a shitload of violence. And that's basically what the film is. It's like 3/4 of it is just death and gore, which is exactly how the Underworld film should be.
Absolutely. I also love the resolution of that big lichen guy, since we're in the spoiler zone.
Yes.
I love the fact that she just puts the charge inside him. You know,
I thought it was a bit cheesy where she flicked the pin at him, but I was kind of just sitting there going, you know what, I'm going to let this go because it's kind of cool.
Yeah,
I also like the way that they finish him off as well, where it's sort of like it goes off and he's kind of growing big, and then you're like, oh, it looks like he might. No, he's going down.
We should talk about Stephen Ray a little bit here, who I don't think any actor working today does Hangdog quite like Stephen Ray. He looks like every time I see him now, because he was in V for Vendetta and he was in Interview with a Vampire and he was in The Crying Game. You know, he's been in a million films. But the thing about Stephen Ray that always gets me is that he always vaguely reminds me of Droopy Dog.
He's like the Snoopy's evil, Droopy Dog's evil cousin.
Yeah, it's like, oh me, oh my. Yeah.
It just has that face. It's like it's falling down as it goes.
It is. He always looks like he hasn't had enough sleep and the world's on his shoulders. And it's interesting to see him making this change into playing a lot of bad guys lately, because he was always the good guy. You know, and it's like, and to see them shifting him as he's getting older, he doesn't look so friendly anymore.
Yeah.
And so I guess they're going, okay, you're a bad guy now. Because if you remember, in V for Vendetta, he was even still a good guy.
Yeah. I thought, I think it's Chris Holden Reed, who was the big, giant, scary lichen, did a really good job. This guy's been getting a little bit of fame recently with this really underdog TV show called Lost Girl.
That's where I've seen him. I watched the first season of Lost Girl.
Any good?
Not really, but he's actually pretty good. He's pretty good. Lost Girl's a really kind of low-rent Canadian Buffy clone.
Oh, God.
And it's not terrible, but it's not particularly brilliant either. You know, and it's like, and you sit there and go, yeah, it's just, it doesn't quite click. And I don't know, it's already just finished its second season, so it obviously has touched somebody, and people are watching it. I couldn't find myself going into the second season. It just didn't interest me enough.
Mm.
But he's actually pretty good. He plays her. Now I'm trying to remember the character he plays in it. He's the love interest in it. But I'm trying to remember what he's. Oh, that's right. He is another member of the. Because she's actually a member of. I'm going to use the word underworld. I don't mean it like the underworld movie. But you know how the concept basically is that there are mythical creatures and demons and stuff living amongst us, and she's actually a succubus.
Right.
Who is trying to, you know, get into normal life and all this sort of stuff. And he is trying to guide her through that world.
I see.
So it's not a great series. But anyway, but he's actually pretty good. And he actually made a really good badass in this.
Yes, definitely.
He was really good. I also want to say that I quite like India Isley. She's the daughter. I thought she did an okay job. She wasn't painful in any place. She actually held her own. And I thought her first transformation, I thought the reaction on Celine's face was priceless. It's like, what the fuck are you? And I also want to say that some of the effects are a little CG heavy, but it actually works. That sequence where they're in the car chase and the lichens are jumping across the cars trying to get to their van, I thought that was pretty wild. That was pretty fun.
Look, like I said, man, I think genuinely the whole film really had it going for itself. I think that if you're a fan of these kinds of films, then you're not going to be let down. I think it was one of those films that it's like immediately added it to my Blu-ray list.
Cool. Yeah, no, this will definitely be on my Blu-ray list. All right, I think we might leave that there. Josh, what do you reckon? You got anything else?
Nope, that's it, man.
Let's play us out of here. Play us out of the spoiler zone with. We'll bring back John Turturro. What do you reckon?
It's Bush League psycho stuff.
Really got to get better sounds, Dave.
I love him. What are you talking about?
There's nothing wrong with it. It just doesn't quite suit the.
No, I need a Claxton or something. I need some. What I really want is I want to grab a clip from Doctor Who when River would always go spoilers. I think that's what we need. All right, so let's move into the home stretch here and basically say that we're going to do our lists of five. Our list of five this week is five movie series that have made it to number four. It can be more than that, but they've made it to number four and are worth watching as a series. Now, Josh, do you want to start us off?
Yes, I'm just literally waiting for my computer to load because I'm lame like that. Okay, my first one on my list. Shut up, Dave. My first one on my list is the most obvious, which is why it's at number 5, which is Mission Impossible.
Mission, yes.
Yep, we got up to 4.
We did.
You know,
didn't
what?
Even occur to
it's
me,
like
actually.
Two nearly killed it, 3 leveled it. And 4, you kind of went, yeah, I'd go see another one.
Yep. No, yep. I agree. No, I think Mission Impossible is a very, very watchable series. Fantastic. My number 5 is the Lethal Weapon series.
Nice.
Because I think 1 and 2 are exceptional. 3 is kind of weak, but I actually thought 4 kind of rounded it off nicely. I think the inclusion of Jet Li really helped.
Yeah, I think to bring in something that was just like completely off center was definitely a good thing.
And some people really deride 4. I think deride is a good finale to that series. It finishes it all off and basically says we're done.
Mm.
And we're not doing any more. You know what I mean? And I like that. I think complete with the fact that they actually have all of the crew photos and everything in the end titles, it's almost like the family album.
Yeah.
I love that. I think that's really cute. You're number 4, Josh.
My number 4 is the Final Destination series. We almost killed it with 4.
Well, that's true. That's
we
true.
Almost killed it, but you know what? God damn it, man. They are still going, and after 5, I will go and see another one.
5 saved it, actually. 5 really saved it.
5 did what 4 did for the Underworld series, which is that it revived it.
Yeah, it kind of reset all the markers.
Exactly. Said, it okay, paddled it and brought it back to life.
Absolutely. My number 4 is the Dirty Harry series.
Yeah.
There's actually many more than 4. I was actually looking at this before. Is Dirty Harry, the Enforcer, Magnum Force, Sudden Impact, and the Deadpool. The Deadpool's not very good, but the rest of them are a lot of fun. So it didn't end particularly well, but
it usually doesn't.
In particular, the first 3 are really good, and yeah. And it's well worth having a look at. Very dated now, but still, I mean, Clint Eastwood kicking ass. Come on, you know, with a giant 44 Magnum, what's not to like?
Exactly.
Your number 3.
Oh man, sorry, you just reminded me of Sudden Impact. I just remembered the poster for that film. A friend of mine has it in their room.
Is it the one with the giant gun poking out?
Oh, it does, but then underneath it, I love the panels where it's like, what is it, in the streets, on the shores, on boats, in stores, and it's just a picture of him in a store, and I'm like, what? Why in stores? Anyway, sorry. My number 3 is the Of the Dead series. Now, I know, Dave, I know that they went shit. I know that they fell apart, right? Mm-hmm. But at 4, I would have still kept watching.
So, now, remind me now, number 4 was...
So, we had
Night of the Living Dead.
We had Day of the Dead. We had Dawn of the Dead. Sorry, other way around.
Yeah, Dawn of the Dead, Day of the Dead.
Then we had Land of the Dead.
Land of the Dead, right. Okay, so number 4 was Land. I didn't hate Land of the Dead. It's not.
It's the same thing for me. Like, I sat down and I wrote it off my list, and then I stopped and went, you know what? I didn't hate 4. It was after that. It was like 4 left you hoping it was going to get better.
Yeah, and what did they have after that? Now, they've had...
Diary of the Dead and Day of the Dead
or something.
And
there was one that just came out.
No,
Survival of the Dead.
Yeah, there's that one as well.
Yeah, there's a
they
whole...
They all just kind of went straight to video after that.
Yeah.
I mean literally VHS.
Yeah, yeah. No, not VHS. This is modern.
I know, but they should be on VHS.
Oh, yes. Mr. Romero, it's time to give it up now, I think. I think we're done.
I think we're done, man.
I think we are done. My number 3 is... I will give you that, though, because let's just pretend like the others aren't there. The first 4... Yeah. Of those 4, the first 3 are the best ones. Out of those, the second one is probably the best, but it's a great series all around. It's very watchable.
Yeah.
Now, my number 3 is Star Trek.
Yeah.
Because if you actually take the reboot, which is canon because they reset the timeline, that's actually 11 films.
Jesus.
And out of 11 films, only one of them is a real stinker. Which is 5. 5 is a real, 5's a real stinker, man. That's a real stinker. The rest of them range from really, really great to they make good episodes for the television series. You know what I mean? So I'm going to say that I think it's a really worthwhile series to sit and watch. The only problem is it takes like, you know, a couple of weeks to sit down and watch it all. So it's too long a series now. That's the problem. Okay, your number two.
My number two is the Nightmare on Elm Street series.
This is a series
very close to my heart. I mean, this is where I first developed a love for horror, really, was that series, because it was the first time I would finish this film, and no matter how much stupid crap was in it, I got to the end of the film and I'm like, I've got to watch the next one. And I literally the first time did like all eight back to back or something ridiculous.
Wow.
Like I just literally smashed each one in the series right through to New Nightmare and then just kind of sat back and went, man, I'm totally doing that again next year. And like I have pretty much done it like systematically every year since, because it's like no matter how tragic there are, there is just so much love and design and intrigue and interesting, you know, sort of development of these characters, and they just take them to all these different locations and add more and add and add and add. It's like no matter how bad it was or how incredibly dated it's become, it's like it's all part of the same thing.
I love the Nightmare on Elm Street films, with the exception of the remake.
There is no remake.
There is no remake. Forget that. But the original, you know, Robert Englund Nightmare on Elm Street films are just great. They're just great fun. Freddy is such a great character. You know, and you just sit there and watch. It's like watching The Further Adventures of Freddy.
Yeah, it pretty much is. Yeah,
who cares about the teens you throw in front of him? We just want to
see. Yeah, they're just fodder, man.
That's right. We just want to see what he does. Agreed. All right, my number two, and this one just squeaks it in because there are only four films, is the Die Hard series, which is, I think, a pretty damn good series. I actually really don't even mind the fourth one. A lot of people derided the fourth one. I really liked it. I thought it was actually all right. It's not the same film. They completely went off in a completely different flavor from the rest of the films, but I quite liked it still. I just like watching McClane. I like watching Bruce Willis get pissed.
Oh, dude, I love four. I don't care what anybody says. I just think that people didn't take it for the fact that they were trying to give you the same film again. Like, people were like, oh, it had this, and this wasn't good enough, and you know, like, it's so average and so simple. I'm like, dude, for what they were, man, it's like, if you actually look at two, it's like, there are so many flaws in that film. And it's like, we don't love it for that reason. We love it because it was balls-to-the-wall action, it was funny, and it had a great bunch of one-liners in it, and that's exactly what they delivered with this film.
See, what's funny is when you actually go back over the entire series, the first film is a masterpiece.
Oh, and, without question.
And you look at that film, and it set the bar so freaking high that there was nothing they could ever do to compare to that film, right? I mean, this is an action film that was unheard of. It was an action film that had great performances, really good actors, a fantastic script, and a director who knew exactly what he was doing. And you sit there and just go, everything about this film works. I watched it again only like 3 weeks ago, and I had so much fun watching it again. And you just sit there and go, this just works on every level. It's got humor, it's got action, it's got drama, it's got, you know, emotional pathos. You know, it just works, you know. And then you look at what Rennie Harlan did with Part 2 and you go, okay, it is nowhere even in the same league as the first Die Hard. But it's an action film and it's balls to the wall and it's fun. You know what I mean? It's stupid, but it's fun. Number three, McTiernan came back, and you go, okay, you're not in top form. It's not quite the first film, and it's not even kind of. It's very different to the second film, but it's not bad. You know what I mean? And he actually did some interesting things with the McClane character. Then we take this big long break, and Len Wiseman comes along and makes a Die Hard film that is very un-Die Hard in many ways, but it's still a balls-to-the-wall action film. Bruce Willis slips into McClane like a very comfortable glove. And it's the there's a McClane move where he keeps going and going and going until it finally just makes him mad. And you can always tell with McClane when he's mad. He gets into that hole, he starts muttering to himself and stuff like that, which is something Willis only does with the McClane character. And that's so much fun watching when he gets mad, you know, and that's what we want to see. We want to see McClane get pissed. You know, and that's in Die Hard 4, it says that wonderful sequence where he brings down the helicopter with a car. You know? It's because he
and
got.
And then, of course, the great line that goes with it.
Absolutely. You killed a helicopter with a car. You know?
I ran out of bullets. And it's just, it is McClane, and I don't care what anybody says, it fits perfectly into the canon. It's like, if you didn't like that film, then maybe you should reevaluate what you thought of the other ones as well.
And stop comparing them and stop trying to make them all be the first film. They're not going to be that first film.
Exactly. And but interestingly enough, people compare 1 and 2 as the same kind of film. They're both just as good as each other. No, they're really not.
No, they're not.
No.
McTiernan, and quite frankly, McTiernan has never even made a film as good as Die Hard Again. Exactly. Even with The Hunt for Red October and Predator and everything else that he made, he never made another film like Die Hard. Die Hard was a rare beast.
Yep.
Very rare beast. And yeah, so anyway. So yeah, I say the Die Hard series. And it got 4, so there you go. It qualifies. your number one.
My number one is a series that I think there's only about probably maybe worldwide 500,000 people that may have seen it.
Oh, really? Ever.
But Phantasm.
You're back on Phantasm.
I don't care.
You're going to end up vaulting Phantasm. I can see.
Damn right. I'm going to get that film recognized if it goddamn kills me. Look, this series is shit. It has terrible acting. It's barely connectable in any way or form, but it will freaking spin your head around. By the time you get to the fourth film, all of a sudden you remember these characters, you have love for them, you want to see where they're going to go with it. But it's a series that you can never ever guess. No matter how good a film critic you are, you're never going to get where they're going to take the film, because you just will never be able to connect the dots. It's like you watch these films and they're just so bizarre and so ironically crazy, just that it's just so many times they'll step over themselves or the law will cross over. But yeah, it's something about it, man. It's like, if you haven't seen it as a horror fan, sit down, force yourself to watch them. It is a freaking ride.
Cool. Yeah, I've actually seen the first. I've seen 1 and 3. I haven't seen any of this, so I will have to.
It's got to be done in order. It yeah. really does. Not that it will give you any better clarity to what the film has to offer, but it's just like, to see them all in a row, it's like all of a sudden at least you do kind of get connection from the characters and who the people are, and then there's sort of a storyline, and then it just ends.
We should also point out, for people who may have heard you talk about Phantasm but have never seen the films but are of my age bracket, you may actually know the film by a different title, because when it was on VHS, it was known as The Never Dead.
Mm.
I don't know why they changed the title in Australia, but
I know that 2 was always called.
Yeah, they gave it back the Phantasm title for the sequels, but the first one had its name changed on VHS, and I don't know why, but I always loved the caption on the first one, which basically said, if this movie doesn't scare you, you're already dead.
I don't know whether scare would be the right word, in my opinion, but it will definitely do some strange-ass stuff to you while you're watching it.
And just look out for the tall man with his flying balls.
Exactly. Flying silver balls, which eventually do get explained as well.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Cool. All right.
Angus Scrimm, man. Creepiest person I've ever seen in my life, and yet also so weird. And also Reggie with his quad-barreled shotgun.
And the guy who directed that movie, or directed that series of movies, actually,
Coscarelli,
has got his new movie coming out soon, which we really want to see. John Dies at the End? Is that what it's called?
Yes. Yeah. Oh, dude, that film. So excited.
Yeah, me
Still
too.
Still excited.
And he also directed, of course, Bubba Hotep, which... To this day, I love Bubba Hotep.
I love this dude. I just think he's fantastic.
I think he's fantastic. Like, he's so creative in his opinion.
Well, and that's the thing. It's like he does that thing where he's just one of those characters where he's like, I don't care what people think. I'm just going to make whatever I want. And he's done things like, he did the original. You remember the Beastmaster film?
Oh, yes. That was him, wasn't it?
That was him, yeah.
Oh, crap. I forgot. I love the first Beastmaster. I saw it at the cinema, Josh. I'm old. Did I tell you that lately?
Yeah, I know. And he also did an interesting episode called An Incident on and Off a Mountain Road, which was one of the...
was that one of the Masters of Horror?
Masters of Horror series. And it was actually one of the better ones as well.
Cool.
So that was an interesting thing, interesting story arc.
Fantastic.
With that film.
And all right. I'm going to give you my number one. And then we're going to get out of here because it's time to do the news. My number one is, I think... probably the most stock standard one I could think of, but really it needs to be mentioned. 7, or if you count the 2 last ones as 1, or as 2 films, because it was broken into 2, 8 films deep, Harry Potter.
Yeah, I almost put it on my list.
The reason why I've got it at number one is because not only did they do eight films, not only are they watchable, I think they actually was one of the few series where they managed to maintain consistency throughout the entire series. And yes, there are ups and downs in it, but it's an amazing effort. We've talked about this on the show before. It's an amazing effort that they managed to create a decade's worth of film. And keep it consistent and tell an entire series of books with the same actors, the same everything. You know what I mean? Really good work and well worth the investment of time.
Definitely.
So that's my number one. I also, the one I was going to talking about at the head of the show where I said I almost put it on my list, but I thought it was hard to explain. I was going to put Jaws. but now I can't put Jaws for one reason because it's already vaulted. So I didn't. But the other thing is it's really hard to explain because Jaws 1 is a masterpiece. Jaws 2, you and I differ on this, but Jaws 2 is watchable. I mean, it's not a bad film.
Definitely.
It's
never say otherwise.
Yeah, it's not a bad film. Jaws 3 is garbage. And Jaws 4 is mega garbage, right? And so you could sit there and say, but why would it be worthwhile to watch? Because let me tell you, Jaws 3 is one of my favorite films of all time because it is so bad. It is so outrageously awful that it actually made the Gloriously Wonderful Bad list. I could watch that film over and over and over again because it just makes me laugh out loud how bad and stupid that film is. And Jaws the Revenge is just silly. That's the thing. Its biggest crime is it's just silly. It doesn't make any sense. It's actually a better made film than Jaws 3. It just doesn't make any sense. And I still pose this question. And this is, I know it's kind of spoilers if you haven't seen it, but let's face it, whoever watches this movie, why does the shark explode at the end?
Dave.
To this day, nobody can answer that question. They all go, Jaws the Revenge, oh yeah, whatever, whatever. And you go, why'd the shark explode? They go, because, now let me think. it was because, didn't he do, no, he didn't do that. Oh, now, there is a reason. I know. For some reason, they race the boat up next to the shark, and for no apparent reason, it spontaneously combusts.
I don't know where you learned about sharks, man, but I'm just saying that's what usually happens.
Is that what happens? They just pop.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Absolutely, man. Just burst into flames. That's just how it happens.
So anyway, so that didn't make the list. But yeah, I got to say, that's the Jaws 3 and 4 are guilty pleasures of mine by far. Really guilty pleasures of mine. All right. That's a show, Josh.
It is a show.
That is a show. I think it's a show. It's about an hour long. It's got a beginning, a middle, and an end. It's kind of a show, you know?
Yeah. It's got some bizarre sounds, which you might have made up for, but no way. No, not like Richard Cann.
Did we say it's a show?
Holy hell!
Yeah, it's a show.
There we go. Now it's sounding more like a joke.
I don't have nearly the effects board that Richard has. He's gone berserk, so I don't know what he's doing with his time. But anyway,
in the best kind of way.
In the best kind of way. All right, so we should mention that if you agree or disagree with anything we've had to say, we'd love to hear your opinions on Underworld. Write to feedback@filmactually.com or send a voicemail to 02-8011-3167. Or, of course, you can also just use our Skype ID of Geek Actually, all one word. Josh, how can people find out more about you?
Oh, they can go on the internet and look at rawdlc.com. There's a whole bunch of new cool articles up. There's interviews with a whole bunch of people. I've been a very busy boy over the last week. So there's interviews with the guy from Kingdoms of Amalur. There's an interview up there with the guy, producer from The Darkness 2.
Cool.
And then there's a whole lot of photos as well. So head over and check out that and a whole bunch of other cool things.
Fantastic. And of course, you can find out more about me by going to geekactually.com. There's a follow us link on the side of the front page. And you can, of course, just find all Twitter addresses and all that sort of stuff there. And we should just throw out Richard's details. I mean, he's not here, but he is a staple.
Cool.
And say that you can find more Richard when he is around at The Real Bits, R-E-E-L, bits.com. Or you can find him on Twitter at DVD Bits constantly. Even now, even though he's not here, he's still sitting on Twitter. we got a couple shout outs to our friends out there out in cyberspace as well. We should just mention that Charlie and Brad are running Rebound Radio. They do a lot of great shows over there, and you should check that out. So reboundradio.com. And our friends over at The Real Junkies, R-E-E-L Junkies, they are at weekendronin.com, or you can search for them on iTunes. They do film reviews like us, and they are a lot of fun. They're just a bunch of dudes who get together and drink tequila and just, you know, chew the fat, basically. Chew the fat. That's what I want to say. That's not the phrase, is it? Shoot the fat. Is that what it is? I don't know.
Something like that.
Yeah, something like that. You guys know what I'm talking about. All right, we open the show, as I said, with a clip from The Big Lebowski, if you don't remember, it's this one.
It's Bush League psycho stuff.
Yeah, that's the one. But with a few more expletives. And we're going to close the show with some music from Underworld Awakening. Now, I've actually just closed the page, so I can't even tell you. It'll be in the show notes. Who wrote this? It's Burslinger, I think is his last name. Anyway, it'll be in the show notes. I closed the page without even thinking about it. And just a reminder that our film show, which is Film Actually News, which is the old film news section of this show, is also on the feed. So if you subscribe to us on iTunes, you'll get both shows. And I also want to say thank you very much to all those new listeners who have come on and started listening to our show. Our numbers took a huge spike in the last 2 weeks. So I think Josh and I can both say thank you.
Definitely.
And thank you very much. And welcome. and I hope we maintain our entertainment value for you. So we will do our best to keep that up. I also want to throw out one more thing because we used to have a lot of crossover listeners. Geek Actually, the old feed on iTunes, is actually still alive. And for those who may be wondering why it is showing up as a featured podcast on iTunes this week, it's because we actually use it as our super feed now. It actually gets all of our shows. So Behind the Panels, Film Actually News, Film Actually, everything is going into that feed as like the one mega feed. So you can subscribe to each individual show if that's all you want to do. Or if you just want everything, you can just subscribe to Geek Actually and you'll get all shows. what's happened though is that's propelled it back up to the top of the page and everybody's going, but this show doesn't run anymore. Why is this on the featured page? It's because it's still getting content. So that's why. All right. Just thought I'd explain that a little bit because I discovered it the other day that we were on the front page of iTunes, not even the front page of, we were just there. And it's like, what the hell are we doing there? Wrong show. But no, that's why, because it is the super feed. Okay, that's it. Have I put you to sleep, Josh?
No, I'm still here, man.
Fair enough. All right. We will be back next week with our next film review, which I have no idea what it is at this point. What are we reviewing next week? I think it's The Artist. Or something.
I guess so.
It could be The Artist, I think. I'll look into that. It'll be on the front page of Film Actually anyway. So we always have the next film on the front page. So check that out. But whatever the film is, it'll be an entertaining review. And Richard should be back with us next week. So that'll be good as well. And Josh, I'm going to call it a show.
I'm going to call it a show too, man. Let's kill it.
And I'm going to say, everybody out there, go see more movies. You don't see enough movies on all of life's questions are answered in the movies. And we'll see you all next week. Bye, everyone. All
right. Bye.